So this episode looks at the significance of the Mohawk Valley during the American Revolution. Most of these podcasts are looked at from a military standpoint, more or less. So why was it significant in the overall battle or the overall war? And what impact did it have on whatever, you know, the consequences may have been at the end? So growing up in the Mohawk Valley, I think that the history books touch on this area a little bit, but I don't think they really explore the importance or the significance of what really happened in this region. So the Mohawk Valley right now is Fulton, Oneida, Herkimer, Schoharie, Montgomery County. But if you think of it on like the thruway perspective, if you look at maybe exit like 32 and you go to exit 27, that would be the Mohawk Valley, more or less. If you live in the valley, you, obviously you know what the valley is, but if you've driven on Herkimer Road or Southside Road in Frankfort, the Mohawk River is right to either side of you. If you go to Utica and you go near, you know, the McDonald's or the Wendy's, you cross over the Mohawk. And if you drive on the thruway, on either side of you going through those exits, you're going to drive along the side of the Mohawk River. So, you know, that river, although it may have changed slightly the path just from like weather and stuff like that, it's pretty much where it was, and it hasn't really moved or changed other than that. The depths may have changed just because we've, over time, built stuff near it. There's a lot of mills in, you know, in the 1800s, 1900s on it, but it's relatively the same path that it's always flown. So if you look at the history pre the revolution, the first people started coming in this area in probably the 1600s from Europe, but the Native Americans lived in this area obviously well before that. So you had like the Mohawks, the Oneidas, and then a bunch of other tribes that fell in between there. But those are kind of the two big tribe names that we learn about in the history books. And then obviously, you know, the town of Mohawk is here, and we have like the Oneida Indian Nation that's still around. But if you were to look at the 200 years leading up to the American Revolution, you could probably spend hours, if not days, looking at the significance around here. But this is really just focused on a couple years before the Revolution and then an actual battle that took place here. So the French were the first to look and actually to come into this region, and they had their own issues with the natives as well. The natives did with them, right? There's an outside group coming in. Obviously, there's going to be conflict. But most of those were French fur traders. They used the Mohawk to, you know, bring equipment or goods back and forth from port towns to maybe into Canada, or they would come trap in the valley area and then use the Mohawk to get that stuff out of here. In the 1700s, when we saw like the French and Indian War, that's when you really saw the British start to kind of form some alliances with these Native American groups that are up here, probably because those groups didn't like the French and wanted them gone, and who knows what, you know, the British promised them at the time. But that's where you start to see a lot of the settlements from the British side of the house start to happen. So a unique thing about the Mohawk Valley and what is modern day like Little Falls and Herkimer and like Schoharie County, like Palatine Bridge and things like that, is historically when people were given land, it was because they were wealthy or they had some kind of influence. They were politicians, they were military leaders, and then they would be given land to make, you know, their farms and things like that. This region was like one of the first ones that was given to settlers who were not wealthy, who didn't have any political influence. Most of them were poor, and they were some kind of refugee from something, whether it was religious persecution or they just were looking for a better life. And when they came here to the Mohawk Valley, they were given plots of land. And most of them were like Dutch or German settlers, so that's why you have like German flats. It's really alien, right? But they were given these plots of land, and they were able to farm them, and then they were able to make money and things like that. But a reason they did it was because you had this conflict in this region with the French and the Native Americans and the British and Native Americans. There was a lot of hostile Native American groups, probably rightfully so, right? I mean, people are coming in and taking their land, but they used these frontier settlers as almost a shield from the actual settlements that were closer inland. So these settlements would have these like little forts almost kind of built on their property that if a Native American raid party was coming through to come and maybe raid or scalp or do something to the area, they would go into these forts and then they would kind of protect themselves until the raid was over. And you kind of saw the development of a militia that was here to protect, you know, protect the family and friends that live near them. So a militia is more or less just a group of people that form together. They're armed, and when they're needed, they, you know, they stop doing their regular day thing, and they come in and they kind of protect the greater good. So in this time frame, everyone had a weapon anyway for hunting and things like that and self-defense. So, you know, they had muskets. It wasn't like they had hunting rifles, but they nonetheless had weapons to protect themselves. So that's kind of where you saw the formation of the militias that started to actually fight in the American Revolution in this area. So like the most notable family name that we know would be the Herkimer family, because we live in Herkimer County if we, you know, live in like the Frankfurt region and things like that. The Herkimer family, when they first came and settled, his name was Johann Herkimer. He was the, you know, the father that came here with his wife and stuff. And when they settled, he was actually a really good businessman. And he was able to actually buy a lot of land from fellow settlers that maybe weren't so good at the business side of farming. But then he would lease it back to them. So he wouldn't take their land from them. He wouldn't kick them off of it. He would just, hey, I'm going to buy the land from you. You're going to lease it. And then I'm just going to get a little bit of the money from it. And he ended up really growing his wealth pretty substantially in that time frame. But he birthed a bunch of children, one of them being Nicholas Herkimer. So during this like 1700s time frame to eight. So from the kind of 1720s-ish moving forward, Herkimer was a leader in the militia. There were some battles that had taken place, you know, with raiding parties and things like that. And Herkimer kind of joined the ranks and climbed the ranks of the Tryon County Militia is what it was known as. He was a captain in like the 1720s. And then from there, it kind of continued on. So on the Mohawk, the Herkimer Plantation or the Herkimer Settlement or the Herkimer Province, it just depends on kind of what you read, what they would call it. But the Herkimer Settlement, it really bordered a huge chunk of the Mohawk River. And there was a section, which is kind of where the Herkimer House is right now. If no one's ever been to the Herkimer House, or if someone hasn't been there, I recommend going to the Herkimer House, kind of walking around and seeing, you know, where they actually lived and some of the stuff that's still there. It's a state site, so it is maintained pretty well. And it's in Little Falls right now. So if you go on their actual property, you can see where the Mohawk cuts right through it. And they set up kind of like a middleman shop. So where when people from New York City or the port of New York would come up the Hudson and they would turn onto the Mohawk and try to trade with the inland settlers or the fur traders, they would have to stop pretty much where Herkimer's house was. And they would have to, in some spots, lift up their boats over some rocky water and then continue on down the Mohawk in an attempt to get to like the Great Lakes region. A lot of these guys would actually just stop, sell their stuff to Herkimer, and then Herkimer would sell it to the ones that would be coming from the other side to come get it. So he almost became like a merchant in a way as well, which also continued to grow his family's wealth. But at this point in time, you know, in the mid 1700s, Herkimer's kind of settlement was one of the bigger settlements inland. So if you think about like right now, you know, the United States covers the entire United States as we know it now, right? From New York to California. The 13 colonies at that time, the furthest that they went in was probably like Rome, New York, where there was actually roads of some sort that you can get to. So, I mean, we're talking, that's like a 4-hour car ride from Rome to New York City right now. That's really not far. We weren't that far in at that point in time. So in Rome, there was actually a military base, which is now known as Fort Stanwix, right? So if you go into Rome, it's kind of directly in the middle of the city. It's a national park. You could go there. It's pretty cool to see. We try to go there. I try to bring my soldiers there when I get new soldiers in the area or new people that work for me, just because I think it's important that, you know, people see the history leading up to things that we do today. And when you look at it, it all tends to make sense in the greater scheme of things. So Fort Sandwich was like the furthest, you know, the furthest base that the British had at that time moving inland. At some point, it was taken over by the Continental Army or, you know, the militia that was fighting for the American Revolution. So when you fast forward to actually the kickoff of the American Revolution, Fort Stanwix is actually taken and controlled by the American Revolution fighters, whether they're the militia or their actual regular army, Continental Army, that was kind of stood up by the Continental Congress and funded that way. So, I mean, definitely a young army. Most of the people in the militias or in the armies had some kind of military experience from helping the British in the French and Indian War or from fighting the actual Native Americans themselves in some capacity. So there was a garrison of soldiers in Fort Stanwix, and pretty much between Fort Stanwix and the Herkimer homestead, there was very little in between other than just woods and maybe small, really small settlements. I think Utica and Rome happened to be settled in like the 1750s time frame, so there was really small settlements at that time, but nothing significant, nothing that was worth any, like, you know, notable concentrations of people or anything. So in around July or August of 1775, Herkimer at the time was in charge of the Tryon County Committee of Safety, which was the local militia in the area. In that time frame, the loyalists who were loyal to the crown actually split from that militia, because at that point in time, you know, the revolution really was just an idea in some people's minds, that, you know, that it wasn't really happening. So at that point, the militia was really there for the king and for Europe or for Great Britain to be here and kind of protect their stuff moving inland. So in 1775-ish and shortly after, the loyalists split from there and fled to Canada. And at that point in time, Herkimer was commissioned as the Brigadier General of the Tryon County Militia by the local congressional leaders of, you know, the Congressional Congress. So in September of 1776, that was when he was given that rank. In June of 1776, he actually had led 380 men from his militia to confront a Mohawk chief, Joseph Brant, which is referenced in a lot of history books, actually. In Unadilla, Herkimer asked the Mohawk and the five other Iroquois nations to remain neutral, but Brant said that his natives owed their loyalty to the king at the time. So Herkimer actually went to try to talk to the Mohawk tribe and their allies to see if, hey, like, we don't want to fight you. Why don't you just remain neutral? Don't fight with the king. And, you know, that it was a failed attempt on his part. A lot of it had to do with the British promised the natives that if they helped them during the revolution, that they would give them a portion of anything that they took from the colonies. So if they were to come across any food, money, weapons, that whoever helped them would get a portion of it. And then that they'd also give them some land too. It probably wasn't a true statement. You know, I'm sure the British weren't really going to do that, but they certainly told the natives that, and the natives believed it at the time. So following that failed attempt to, you know, kind of get the Mohawk and the five other Iroquois nations to remain neutral, the war really started to kick off. And at that point in this region, the natives were helping the British and the British allies fight in here. So the British had mercenary groups fight with them too. It wasn't just like redcoats, what we hear if you watch the movie The Patriot and things like that. There are some Hessians, there's mercenary groups from Germany and things like that that actually fought here. So we talked about Fort Stanwix like 2 minutes ago, and that's where we really see like the significance of this area of what happened. So, you know, Herkimer couldn't get the natives to remain neutral. So now you have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of Native American warriors that are assisting the British in this region. The British troops really don't know much about this area at all, nor do the mercenary groups, because the militia has always protected it and has always been the frontier post. So, you know, they're relying on their Native American allies to really help them, guide them, show them where things are, and help them fight in this area. So in Fort Stanwix in like July of 1777, the British and their allies have begun to siege Fort Stanwix. So a siege is when you completely surround a base and you cut off anything from going in and going out. And basically you try to starve them to get them to surrender, right? So if you're in the base, you're relatively safe as long as you are given food and ammunition and things like that, right? So like once that stuff runs out, it's only a matter of time before you're too weak to fight and then you ultimately surrender. So the siege of Fort Stanwix began. Herkimer was notified about this from a runner. So a runner was literally someone who would just get on a horse or run and come tell the closest military unit what was happening. So he gathered his militia and they began to march for Fort Stanwix. It's 28 miles from Fort Stanwix to pretty much where Herkimer's house was. So you could imagine that that march with troops would be quite a bit of time. There wasn't a road like the throughway to just throw your horses and carts on, right? They had to pretty much ruck it on foot all the way through. As General Herkimer was getting towards Fort Stanwix, the plan was devised to do the following. General Herkimer was going to sneak up behind the British camp and the Native American camp, and he was going to set up an ambush, right? So an ambush is when you kind of hide, you set up, and then once the enemy starts coming towards you, then you pop out and you surprise them and you engage them. So the plan was Herkimer is going to set up an ambush behind the British in the British allies camp. And when he began attacking them, the troops that were in Fort Stanwix were going to come out and they were going to attack the British from their new rear, right? So from behind the British at the time. So if the plan went well, what would happen is Herkimer would start engaging the British and the natives, and then the Fort Stanwix garrison would open up and come from behind and ultimately kill or capture the enemies that were in the area. And then they would be able to end the siege and they'd be able to get the needed materials into Fort Stanwix to help the families and the people that were there. So Herkimer's on his march there. It's a little unknown of what went wrong or who tipped who off, but it's noted in some history books that somebody had told the British of what was happening, whether it was a loyalist that was still in the militia or if it was a loyalist that lived in one of the small little settlements on the way to there, or if it was a Native American, you know, kind of like a scout or a spy that knew this troop movement was coming. So what ended up actually happening was the British and the natives, they set up an ambush on Herkimer's troops in what we now know is Oriskany. And that is where the Battle of Oriskany happened. So Herkimer's guys were kind of marching through this Oriskany area, and the British and their allies had set up a ambush, and they began to open fire on Herkimer's soldiers. Herkimer had a pretty big troop movement. I think it was between like 600 and 800, maybe a little bit more, which was a pretty significant unit in that time. Herkimer, you know, he fought for a while fighting off the ambush. They took some pretty significant losses at the time. And leading up to that battle, that battle was actually the bloodiest battle to date in the American Revolution at Oriskany. So Herkimer fought as much as he can. And when the garrison at Fort Stanwix heard all the shooting take place, they came out, but the British weren't there. And they're like, okay, change plans. So like, what are we going to do now? So they continued to advance their troops forward to try to find where the British were. And on the way to try to see wherever the battle was taking place, they actually came across the British camp that was now empty because the British troops were fighting. And they also came across the Native American camps, which was also empty. But everybody's possessions were there. So the natives often fought with everything that they had. They had their, you know, their battle gear or their ceremonious like headgear and things like that that they had. They carried most of their possessions with them when they fought. Unlike the British, who pretty much only carried their military stuff and then whatever they brought here from Europe to fight with. So the Fort Stanwix garrison actually went through and took anything of value from both camps. They took all the food, they took money, weapons, clothing, anything they could, packed it all up, and then ran back into the fort and shut the fort down. So they couldn't, you know, the British couldn't get in. So the fighting's still going on in Oriskany. General Herkimer decides to retreat back to his homestead with his troops after taking some serious losses, and they begin their retreat back. General Herkimer is actually wounded in the battle, and that would be the wound that would ultimately kill him in the following days. But from an initial military standpoint, you know, the battle was lost. The Continental Army / militia who actually fought, right? So the actual colonies, the American Revolution, they lost that battle, right? Anyone on that side lost that day. The British won, the natives won. What significantly changed everything was when they went back to their camps. So when they went back to the camp and the natives saw that everything was missing, it really tested their loyalty to the British, because at this point, the British had promised them all these things. They promised them, you know, wealth. They promised them food and equipment and things. And, hey, if we take this village, you could have it. And they weren't given anything yet at this point. And now when they come back from the battle, everything that they did have is gone. So now they have nothing. And at that point, you saw a bunch of the loyalists in the Native American Party that were loyal to British. They left the British Party and they went back to their places. And most of them remained neutral for the remainder of the war. Some of them actually switched their alliances to the, you know, the American Revolution cause. So it doesn't sound like it's that significant of a battle, but you lost the initial battle, but you ultimately win the overall war because of that decision. Because now the British have to pull out of this area. They can no longer be here because they don't have anybody that knows the territory. They don't have anybody that knows the region. So as they begin to retreat back, you then see players like Benedict Arnold, when he was still on the Continental Army, come in, and you see what happens in Saratoga, which is, you know, kind of what we consider the turning point of the American Revolution. The Continental Army wins there, and then you start to see the revolution really kick up, and then ultimately what we have now. So the history books, they might briefly mention the Battle of Oriskany just because it was a battle and it was really bloody, but at the end of the day, it was so significant in that the British could no longer fight in this region and they had to pull back. As they were pulling back, they ultimately didn't have the troop strength to win in Saratoga. And then now we see how we won the American Revolution. So, I mean, that was a really quick rundown of what happened in this region. And it's just one story, right? So I kind of look at each story individually, but that was what I think is probably the most significant battle in the Revolution, even more so than Saratoga, more so than, you know, the shots fired in Lexington and Concord and the Battle of Bunker Hill and everything else that we saw. So moving forward, I'll have other ones available that people could listen to that might look at other aspects of the Revolution, especially like Saratoga and things that happened in the North Country and some of the stuff that other militias did. But that is, you know, kind of the big Revolution win for the Mohawk Valley. So thanks for listening, and if you have any comments or anything, or if you want to hear specific things, just let me know. These things will be on a Facebook page too that you could like comment on and, you know, learn more stuff about. So thanks for listening.